Welcome to the Savvy Shrink Podcast, brought to you by MHNRnetwork.com. I'm your host, Andrea Schneider. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, therapist, and life coach. I will be sharing helpful information for individuals dealing with varying mental health challenges, ranging from trauma and loss to recovering from toxic relationships in love, work, and family, specifically as relates to narcissistic abuse recovery. Other poignant topics will include maternal mental health and special needs parenting, among others. The podcast welcomes guests who share their expertise in trauma-informed and evidence-based interventions, including the latest in neuropsychology. My ebook, Soul Vampires: Reclaiming Your Lifeblood After Narcissistic Abuse, is available at BookBaby and other digital online booksellers. I'm a believer in a strengths-focused perspective for my clients, which harnesses the power of internal wisdom in crafting the inner alchemy of healing. Please grab a cup of coffee or tea, and welcome to the Savvy Shrink. Welcome to the Savvy Shrink. Today's guest is Sherry Steins. Sherry Steins is a recovery expert specializing in personality disorders, complex trauma, and helping people overcome damage caused to their lives by addictions, abuse, trauma, and dysfunctional relationships. Sherry is a writer, an educator, and a counselor of Lifeline Counseling Services in La Habra, California. And she can also be found at therecoveryexpert.com, where she provides life coaching services. She's also a prolific writer for Psych Central under her blog, The Recovery Expert, and goodtherapy.org, in addition to other publications. So Sherry, welcome, and we're so happy to have you here today and to talk about today's subject, which is going to be around parental alienation and dealing with the subtle nuances of co-parenting with a narcissistic partner or ex-partner. Those are pretty hefty topics to address, and we're just so honored to have you here today, Sherry, so welcome.
Well, thank you. Hi.
So I think a lot of people have found your work through your incredible writing. You're an amazing writer, and you talk a lot about narcissistic abuse recovery. Today's topic is going to be more about dealing with parental alienation and circumstances where there's been a break in the relationship where one parent is a narcissist, and there's a potential dynamic of parental alienation going on with a divorce or a pending divorce. So welcoming your expertise and information about that, and if you could share a little bit about how you view what parental alienation is. I know that you've most recently written a blog post about this particular theme, and if you'd like to share a little bit about that, that'd be so helpful.
Before I talk about parental alienation, I just want to point out that just because people are in a relationship with a narcissist or they're divorced or the other parent is a narcissist doesn't necessarily mean they're going to experience parental alienation. Uh-huh. It doesn't happen all the time. It does happen, but it doesn't happen in every situation. So before I talk about that, I want to just describe what parental alienation is, at least from the perspective of having a narcissistic co-parent.
Fabulous. Please do.
Because a lot of people don't even understand that. Now it's
exactly.
So it's often called attachment-based parental alienation, and it has to do with the attachment relationship between the parent and the child. And what happens in a narcissistic family is the narcissistic parent, especially through a divorce or a separation between the parents, the narcissistic parent will somehow manipulate the children or one of the children or a few of the children to reject the other parent, the empathic parent, the parent that doesn't have a personality disorder. Mm-hmm. And it is a subtle, coercive dynamic that occurs under the radar. And the children don't really realize that they're rejecting the other parent. They just believe that the other parent's bad and the other parent doesn't deserve to have their love. And it's very, very painful. I talk to many people who go through that, and they're always asking me, what can I do? What can I do? And they want to find a therapist who can talk to their children and help them not do that. And it's a very complicated situation. The main thing I can do to help people is explain to the non-narcissistic parent how they can influence the relationship with their children.
Good.
I'm going to just go over the highlights about how the narcissist manages to get the children on his side. So one of the things that happens in these relationships, usually the parent who's not a narcissist does all the heavy lifting. They're the main parent. They're the ones who go to the teacher-parent conferences. They're the one who help the kids with their homework. They're usually the more responsible parent. And the narcissist, well, they tend to reject or be disengaged from their children's lives. They may have a golden child or a favorite that they pay attention to, but often that may be one child that's favored to the exclusion of the others. But however it happens, when the non-narcissistic parent is finished with the relationship, however the relationship ends, the parent who was not involved in the children's lives will often all of a sudden show up to the table and actually be present in kind of an enmeshment type way, so that the child is finally getting that favored attention that it's been starving for. Because of this, they will attach to that parent, and they also have watched the narcissist reject the good parent, the quote unquote good parent. And because of watching that rejection, they internalize that and don't want to be rejected themselves, so they can be easily manipulated to decide to side with the narcissist as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a trauma bond.
Yes.
It's like a Stockholm syndrome. And the narcissist will often be playing their violin. Oh, woe is me. If only your mom or dad didn't kick me out, or if only they could love me, we could still be a family again. And they act very convincing that they are the victim. And the children who love both parents start thinking, you're right, you know, mom or dad, that they were mean to you. Or they really believe that the non-narcissistic parent has been a villain. So this dynamic is very painful. It's very painful for the other party. They don't know what to do. They're beside themselves with agony. They've already lost their marriage. Now they're losing their children or one of their children. But there are things people can do. One more thing I want to say about that.
Good.
Yeah. Have you ever noticed or heard about cults?
Yes.
Religious cults?
Yes.
And you notice how when people get caught up in a cult, they will reject their family.
Mm-hmm. I've heard
and
that.
And their friends. Like,
right.
So it's similar to that.
Okay.
It's almost as if the narcissist is a cult leader.
Hmm.
Who can woo the loyalty out of their children,
right,
convincing the children that the enemy is the other parent. It's very covert, but if you can think of how it's done in a cult situation, you can see it's kind of a little micro cult.
Right. Interesting.
And there's a lot of different, yeah, there's a lot of different dynamics going on. The subtle constant message that the narcissist is a victim, the absorbing of that victim energy the children are doing, the seeing the other parent being rejected, the coveted attention they're finally getting from the narcissist, the role modeling, the imprinting, it all plays into that.
Right.
So anyway, basically
yes,
that's how it all occurs. It's
yes,
crazy and confusing.
Right. I think that's a good
but
analogy.
It happens a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a good analogy, a cult analogy. And we see that in sort of in family systems, but then in also romantic relationships. And it seems unfortunate, to say the least. You know, the children are innocently the bystanders and also impacted by narcissistic abuse by the narcissistic parent. And it's so wonderful that our listeners today can hear your expertise and understanding about what survivors could do really to raise their children and protect them from that emotional abuse by a narcissistic parent, if that parent is involved in the child's lives.
I also think it might be useful to say what it looks like.
Mm-hmm. Go for it. Absolutely. Please
so,
share.
So say you're the other parent. You're the one who's like, I'm finally escaping, or I'm trying to escape from this insane relationship that seems to have destroyed my self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
So how you can tell if your children are getting sucked into this dynamic is they will start being like the narcissistic parent. I have heard parents tell me that, and I hear it a lot with boys for some reason, and then they're identifying with a narcissistic father. My son cussed me out. He pushed me today. He says, if it weren't for you, we'd still be a family. He quit participating in his favorite sports. He quit doing his homework. He doesn't want to come see me. Like, a girl can do it too, but I just happen to hear a lot of this going on with boys, especially maybe between the ages of 10 and then older, and adult children do it too. Yeah. And girls do it too. But so they'll start kind of mimicking the other parent, and they express a lot of disrespect to the non-narcissistic parent. So I know teenagers in general can be disrespectful, so it's kind of hard to tell.
Sure.
The difference between just normal teenage rebellion and then parental alienation. But there is a time, I guess, where the child doesn't seem to have any empathy for that other parent.
Right. I see that in my practice, for sure. And so I think this is a very common concern for the non-narcissistic parent. What do they do, you know, in a circumstance where one of their children is acting out and identifying with the aggressor? So
personally, I'm raising three teenagers alone who have a narcissistic parent, the other parent. So some of the things I can tell you not to do, I can just tell you don't do this, is, okay, this is personal. This is my personal opinion. This isn't something I've actually seen in writing. Well, maybe I have from some of the people, some clients and some people. I've asked for input on this, and I've gotten some input from a lot of parents as to what they do. But one thing I can say is that children need to feel secure.
For sure.
Children need to feel empathy. They need to feel validated, and they need to feel protected, which is the security. If you've got one parent that's a narcissist, you aren't getting empathy or validation. What you're getting is seduction and manipulation. When you're the other parent and you are devastated by what's going on, and you cry and you beg and you feel weak, you are not giving any confidence to your kids. I can tell you that you will not win this battle by being weak. I see that across the board. And when people go to get a therapist or to find somebody to help them with this, I think they expect the counselor or therapist to fix it for them or fix their kids for them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's how you do it. Personally, I think you have to heal yourself. You have to be the strength for your kid. You have to be strong, and you have to trump the strength of the narcissist.
Mm.
You have to show your children, this is what I see that works, is that you let your kids know that you can handle it.
Right.
And that you are not going to be disrespected by either the narcissist or your children.
Exactly.
And that it's like almost like a hell no. Like, you're going to exude some energy, and it has to be exuded energy. You got to counteract it.
Sure.
Like victim. Mm-hmm. Narcissist energy on the other side, right?
Right. So like assertion and sort of containing the quote unquote acting out behavior of the narcissistic parent to a degree.
So this is the ingredients I see to combat parental alienation. One piece of advice I often tell people with very young children, like under the age of teenager, is don't get divorced. Stay.
Yeah.
I tell people that because once you go to court and lose 50% of the time with the kid, they're going to be imprinted with that other parent 50% of the time, and your influence just went out the door.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's good to stay with a narcissist or stay in an abusive relationship, but strategically, if you want to be present for your kid's childhood, you got to do whatever it takes to figure out how to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And divorce situations, oftentimes I see the narcissist demand 50% custody, even from at least 50%, if not full custody, even from kids they didn't pay any attention to while in the relationship, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's just something I'm like, if you really want to be every day with your kid, then I would stay until I can see that I don't need to worry about that anymore. That's just one thing that I've observed. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so say you're already separated and it's too late and you only have them for whatever time period you have them. When they're with you, you you've got to be something different than what they're experiencing at the other parent's house, which is the same thing you experienced, basically, that they're not being validated. They aren't seen for who they are. They aren't valued for their intrinsic value. They're just valued for whatever kind of utilitarian purpose they can serve for that parent, right?
Right.
So you have to be something else. You have to have the empathy. They're going to come home and disrespect you. So you're going to have to teach them how to be respected. And you don't have to yell at them. You just have to, can you please rephrase that in a more persuasive manner?
Yeah.
Or let's try having this conversation so that there's no abuse in your tone or in anyone's tone. Or we live in an abuse-free home. We will all be respectful to each other here. Good. Everyone in this home deserves respect. All people mm-hmm. deserve respect.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because I'm the parent. We all deserve respect.
That's right.
And kindness. So just expecting the respect, teaching the respect, teaching the character traits they're not getting, and
mm-hmm.
letting your children know that you can handle this, mm-hmm. that you are strong, mm-hmm. that they are safe, that they can't shake you, because they're going to try to see what you're made of. They're going to test every limit on you.
Absolutely. They want to make sure that they're safe with you. So they're going to test those buttons and, you know, try to test those limits and press the buttons of patience for sure. And it makes great sense.
Well, they're going to see how disrespectful they can be to you.
Yeah.
To see if they can get that coveted attention from that other parent. They're believing that, oh, this is the rules of the game. You know, they already lived in the home. They already know, oh, somebody should be scapegoated.
Yeah.
They learn, oh, we need to scapegoat someone. And I teach my children about scapegoating. Scapegoating is when you target a person and kind of like bullying in a family, or you blame someone else, and that's not healthy.
Right.
It's healthy to take personal responsibility. And mm-hmm. what can I do, you know, to be a better person?
Good.
So let me see. So let's see, empathy and validation and strength, teaching respect, teaching empathy. Children need to be mm-hmm. taught empathy.
Oh, for sure.
They need to learn by you reflecting it to them, because we're all reflecting each other, right?
Sure.
When the kids are with the narcissist, they're reflecting that crazy narcissistic detachment bond or whatever that is, you know. But then mm-hmm. when they're with somebody with empathy, they're learning
right.
how to reflect empathy to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that needs to be taught, especially when you have limited time with your kids and you have to undo some damage, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then what's the other thing? So reflect. You always want to reflect. The kid comes home, they're angry. Oh, I see you're angry.
Mm-hmm.
I see you seem to be demonstrating disrespect. What's going on? Reflect.
Yeah.
You're acting, you know, like something's troubling you. So reflecting is very helpful for just having a non-emotional response.
Oh, definitely.
Kind of getting a conversation started. Yeah. I mean, I always, when in doubt, reflect.
Absolutely. Yeah, just being a good model of compassion, empathy, reciprocity, accountability, you know, integrity, all of those things are the opposite of what narcissism is. So it's sort of contradicting what the child's experience is in the narcissistic parent's home, and it's creating like a safe anchor of predictability and consistency, I think, as well for the children. And
right, because you have to undo all that chaos
right.
that's going on internally in the narcissist's head. You know,
yeah.
Well, I look at narcissism personally mm-hmm. as multiple personality disorder. Like I see
yeah.
their fragmented sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
They bring out the persona that's going to serve the purpose for the moment, right? When they get threatened, If their vulnerability is threatened, they're gonna bring out that entitled persona or that bad king persona or the
mm-hmm.
Victim persona or the innocent persona. Like there's different effective modes of operation that
mm-hmm.
they use to mm-hmm. to do their bidding. So it's very fragmented. They're not integrated. So when
yeah.
the kid's around it, or when we're around, when anyone's around it, it really is baffling.
Yeah.
And when we're not talk about parental alienation for a minute, but just dealing with a narcissistic parent.
Yes.
When you're, or a person, a narcissistic person, it could be your boss, it could be your coworker, it could be your sister, you know, anybody, to understand that you're dealing with somebody who's got different personalities is very helpful for me, mm-hmm. because I want my children, and I know people want their children to have permission to love their narcissist in their life. It's okay to love them. Just understand what you're dealing with. Like, there's a good, they may be a good mom and a bad mom. You know, sure. When the bad mom demonstrates these certain traits, right? When she shows up, then it's time for you to put your boundary and exit.
Yeah.
It's time for you to realize this environment is not safe for me. This is something I think is beneficial to teach children.
Sure.
Permission to love. But mm-hmm. yet understand that that person has a mental illness. They mm-hmm. are fragmented. Mm-hmm. They have different personalities. You are confused because they're all in the same skin. They all mm-hmm. look the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's the mirroring, what I'm observing and what I'm experiencing is different all the time.
Sure.
So
that's so confusing.
I love the good, for the good
kid.
Mom.
Yeah, so confusing.
It's confusing for everybody.
It is.
You can teach your kids.
Mm. That's great that you have that advice, because I see so many clients who are dealing with the cognitive dissonance in the aftermath of narcissistic abuse, and it's hard enough for them as adults, but to be able to teach that to their child, to try to understand that it's not personal, although, you know, abuse is absolutely not okay, regardless of the diagnosis, of course, but, you know, trying to teach a child that there is behavior that comes from a mental illness from that parent. Gosh, that's a book for you to write, Sherry, seriously.
Well, right now I'm writing a book called, I think it's called Co-Parenting with a Narcissist. Or
good.
Something like that. It's going to be something. It's how to do this, because people struggle with this.
Yeah.
Another thing, people read parenting books or they get counseling, and I don't think that when you're dealing with a personality disorder that you're going to do something the way a typical advice. To me, the rules are different.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell people how to manage their own family,
sure.
but for me, I talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about the multiple personalities.
Yeah.
There's this personality that's a victim. There's a personality that's a dictator. There's a personality that's detached and disengaged.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a personality that acts clueless and innocent about everything. I said, and then there's the normal host. I guess we could call it the host, the good person. That's the one you love and that's the one you connect with.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to just be aware that these other people live inside.
Right. I think that's a good way to frame it, you know, to children so that they can sort of understand there's many aspects to this particular mental illness that is really scary. And the kids really do walk on eggshells around somebody with a personality disorder. So it's so complex to, you know, try to advise a client on how to help their child. But what I'm hearing you say is that you really coach the non-narcissistic parent in terms of how to parent their children and giving them
that's
a lot
the
of
only
suggestions.
Thing I that's the only thing I do. Yes. I don't even, people say, oh, can you talk to my child? Can you do therapy with my child? I don't, for one thing, you've got to have permission from both parents. It's mm-hmm. a conflictual divorce situation.
Right. A nightmare.
It's like, yeah, I think it's probably the smartest thing to do. And I do have a lot of input from people who've done it, because
mm-hmm.
I sent out an email blast saying, to people on my email list saying, could you give me your input on what works and what didn't work for you?
Yeah.
So I learn what people tried, and a lot of people said nothing works.
Oh, gosh. Impressive.
I hear that the most.
Oh, my goodness.
That's the most common response in my book. That's my first chapter. But,
oh, no.
But we have to move on, right? So,
well, and so, I think you've lived to tell the tale, and you're an example of someone who, even though you've survived some very challenging circumstances, you could say that there's some aspects of your life where you're thriving in too, and that there's hope. There's hope for the possibility that the survivor and the children can move forward and heal, even in circumstances where there's a narcissistic parent or that individual has that's abusive has partial custody or visitation with the children. What would be some hope that you would offer survivors?
I actually prepared for that because you did ask, you said, I'm looking at the questions you asked me.
Can you offer hope? Yeah.
Can you offer hope? Is it possible for the survivor and children to move forward and heal? Okay, so this is my thought on that.
Uh-huh.
Having a narcissistic person in your life or having your kids have a narcissistic parent is just one problem in the continuum of problems in the human experience.
Yeah.
It's not the only problem.
Right.
Yes, this is a sucky problem. It's not fun. It's very emotionally challenging.
Uh-huh.
But narcissistic abuse is just one of the many forms of difficulties that anybody faces. Everybody faces something. Just because you're facing this challenge in your family doesn't mean you have a life sentence of doom.
Good. Like, I think that's good information. Doomed. Right. Listeners need to hear that there's some hope.
You have a difficult person. Mm-hmm. I mean, what family doesn't have a difficult person in it? I mean, that's just reality.
That is. Absolutely.
There's nothing new under the sun here.
Uh-huh. Yep.
It's not the end of the world. One of the things you learn from this is how to handle a difficult person. Mm-hmm. You learn what you're made of. You learn who you are. You learn, you can teach your children a lot of things. You can teach your children about the imperfections of life, about expectations in other people, about how to be genuinely an authentic who you are person without needing to be defined by anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You learn about faith. You learn about your own inner strength. You learn, because your kids are going to grow up, they're going to have some kind of crazy boss someday, or, you know, life isn't easy. There's challenges.
Mm-hmm. That's the truth.
This is the family of origin that your children are growing up in. And they're learning. They're learning about life.
Uh-huh.
As the non-narcissistic parent, you are a teacher. That's one of your roles, is to teach your children about life. You teach them resilience.
Good.
Resilience is where you use your strengths to overcome the weaknesses. If the emotional pain and the challenges of having a narcissistic parent are in your life and in your family, then how do you still have a good life and still have hope for your future?
Mm-hmm.
You teach your kids that. Yes, this is just one aspect of your life. It's not all of your life. You know, this is not defining of who you are as a human being.
Right.
There is always hope that you can thrive in your life, regardless of any of the people that are in it. Because
mm-hmm.
it's not really about the other person.
Good point.
It's kind of like this is the constraint. There's always a problem, basically.
Sure.
We don't have a life with no problems. That's not anybody. Nobody.
Yeah, absolutely. And so to deal with
it. We don't want to teach our kids that only a life with no problems is worth living or can be filled with contentment.
Mm-hmm.
You can still be content regardless of what other people are doing in your life. And the non-narcissistic parent needs to really be empowered to not give their power to that other parent.
Sure.
Do not let, I see a lot, this is another thing I see, a lot of the non-narcissistic parents are so abused.
Mm.
They've been devalued, thrown away, discarded, replaced. You know, they feel such low self-worth that they often just roll over.
Right.
And give up.
Yeah.
It's like.
Right. And so some work for the survivor. Yeah. The survivor needs a lot of support themselves.
Tell people, embrace your motherhood, embrace your fatherhood,
mm-hmm.
claim it. Like mm-hmm. Don't just hand it over to the.
Right.
Don't hand it over to the other parent who's just because they're so convincing and mm-hmm. you know how they are. They're like They act like everything they say is the truth. And
yeah, you speak to something very important in terms of, you know, self-care and reclaiming self-worth in the aftermath of a narcissistically abusive relationship. And so it sounds like you're really emphasizing the importance of the non-narcissistic parent to fortify their boundaries, to really work on their self-worth and their own counseling, to do whatever trauma work they need to do to heal. And at the same time, doing the best that they can as a good enough parent to really share those important values of empathy, compassion, reciprocity, integrity, accountability, and really model that as a teacher for the kids, and to not underestimate the influence the non-narcissistic parent has. So there might be times.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, there might be times in a child's developmental life cycle where they are testy and acting out like a teenager or a toddler. But sometimes they're also testing to see if the non-narcissistic parent is going to be there for them and to be consistent and create that safety and containment for that child's life. And so to be consistent with boundaries, with discipline, and to be able to be a teacher and a mentor for the children is so vital. And as children work through those developmental stages, oftentimes I think the non-narcissistic parent, at least the clients that I work with, have indicated that they do kind of come full circle back to the non-narcissistic parent and really appreciate that safe anchor the non-narcissistic parent has provided for them. So even though it may not feel like the survivor parent of narcissistic abuse is really being appreciated or valued by their kids at times, I have seen circumstances with my own clients where, again, things come full circle and the children really grow to a respectful, loving, connected, healthy relationship with a non-narcissistic parent. So I think there's a lot of reason to be hopeful, and you're living proof of that just by sharing your own experience as a human being, but also as a therapist, and all of the wonderful literature that you have written to really share your wisdom with other people. So it's very impressive, and you know how to make lemonade out of lemons, Sherry. And you're modeling
that. Well, thank you.
You're modeling it for other people. So that's awesome.
I know that there's a tendency when you're dealing with a manipulative other parent to compete. Mm-hmm. And try to, like, the other parent may take your kid to Knott's Berry Farm, so you're going to take them to Disneyland, or they're going to buy them, you know, a cell phone, so you're going to buy them a PS4, you know, a PS5, or, like, you're going to up the, mm-hmm. like, you could get caught up in trying to compete, and
yeah.
My opinion is if you catch yourself doing that,
right,
to just lay that down and don't allow yourself to do that. You do not have to compete. Mm-hmm. Let them do their bells and whistles and let them just do that stuff without getting sucked into that manipulation. And also another thing I think is trying to be nicer. I don't think nicer is a good parent. I think good as opposed to nice. Like,
yeah.
Nice isn't necessarily good.
Yeah.
And good isn't necessarily nice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying to be mean, but sometimes one of the things that all kids do, regardless of the narcissist, non-narcissist, is they know your weakness.
Mm-hmm.
So say you don't want to be appearing as controlling. Whenever your kids want their way, they're going to say, oh, you're just being controlling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you're separated or divorced from a narcissist, and that person uses all your weaknesses against you and has taught your kids the same thing, they've said you're controlling. That means get off their back and don't demand anything of them.
Mm-hmm.
So you get completely beaten down and trying to prove you're not controlling, right? That's the thing. I'm not controlling, therefore do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids will do that to you. So you have to learn to let them think you're controlling, basically.
Hmm.
Let them think you're mean. If that's what they like, using those statements that just drop the conversation, kind of like, you're so controlling. Like, for me, it would be like, well, that could be true. Maybe you're right. Mm-hmm. You know, so you say, like, nevertheless, like, comments like that kind of drop the argument.
Right, right.
Because there's no way I'm going to let my values go down just because my child doesn't like them.
Yeah.
And wants to tell me, oh, you're mean, or you're crazy, or, yeah, you know, the things they've heard from the other parent.
Exactly.
Is to let that need for that to not be true. It's like you have to let go of that. It's like, let them think it. If that's what they want to think.
Sure.
But I don't even know if they think it, but they're just using it to get their way.
Yeah.
And it works. It's a very effective strategy. Teenagers are very good at it, and so are narcissists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So for me, I have to be okay with who I am.
Right.
Regardless of how someone else is going to define me.
Good. Good
even
point.
If it's my own kids.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in these kind of relationships with the competition, like, well, I want to be the non-controlling, non-mean parent. No, you need to be the authentic parent. And being a good parent isn't about being manipulated by your kids and teaching them, reinforcing that manipulation works. That is not going to raise a good adult either. You have to call it out and be solid in your own sense of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, your kid wants to have a curfew at 11 because if you tell him to come home at 10, because otherwise you're controlling and crazy and mean, right?
Right, right.
It's like, nevertheless, I want you home at 10.
Yeah. And so consistency is really important. Consistency and follow through and just execution of the consequence or the discipline without emotion and just being consistent. They know what to expect out of you. And they know what they're going to get. They may not like it, but it creates security and safety emotionally as well.
It does. It makes them feel secure because kids need to know. I heard this on, I think it was a podcast I was listening to. Someone said your kids need to know where the guardrails are.
Good point.
I know. I thought that's so true. So,
yeah.
So you have to have the guardrails, even if, and you're in a battle. You're in a battle with this kind of, family.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in a healthy family, you're not in a battle with the other parent.
Yeah.
you're in a loving relationship, role modeling a healthy attachment and a loving partnership, right?
Sure.
Well, that doesn't happen in these relationships with a narcissist. You have to figure out how to teach your kids that a different way, but you also need to give them security that you are contained.
Mm-hmm.
You're okay. You're not wavering.
Yep.
Even if you feel like, I can't do it, you have to don't let your kids know you feel that way. Just,
mm-hmm,
I can do it. You got to give yourself a little pep talk.
Exactly.
I can do this thing.
Inner cheerleading.
Okay.
Inner cheerleading, right?
Yeah, don't. Right. Don't let them see you sweat.
That's true. And so do you.
Because it's like you're in a battle.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't go to, when you're in this kind of situation, you don't do that. You have to fight for your own,
mm-hmm,
sense of value, your own survival, your own space in the family. And
right.
For me, my kids, like, I'm going to know what you're doing. You're not going to do whatever the hell you want. You're going to let me know, ask me.
Mm-hmm.
There will be communication because the other parent's going to try to marginalize,
mm-hmm,
you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, like, claim it. Like, I'm not going to be marginalized. I'm not going to be smeared.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to be discounted.
Mm-hmm.
And you will tell me or ask me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've instilled that because it's a very, very important to let your children know that you are the one with the guardrails.
I think that's great information. That's really important. And you've shared a tremendous amount of very helpful information for our listeners. And I know my clients will be listening as well. And I'm sure yours as well. But I think it's important for people to know what kind of resources are out there to get this kind of assistance and encouragement. And it's really wonderful to know that you offer that kind of service to the non-narcissistic parent in terms of parent guidance and how to help the non-narcissistic parent nurture and teach healthy emotional skills, healthy attachments, healthy emotional regulation, there's a real need for that out there because, you know, there's not a lot of people that really specialize in this particular area. So I think it's wonderful that you're writing about it, that you're helping people with this particular concern. And I know that we're running up on time now, but I wondered if there was anything more that you wanted to share with our listeners regarding this area before we end our podcast today. Is there anything further that you think would be an important message to drive home to our listeners?
I think I have a bullet list here. Maybe I can end with this. Mm-hmm. You asked me this question.
Okay.
How can you avoid parental alienation?
Mm.
Okay. So I think I can just, and this is from input from others too,
mm-hmm.
and from research.
Okay.
And from people, I ask people who's been there, what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just a theory. It's like practical advice. And of course, keeping in mind everyone's unique and an individual. There's no one size fits all for anybody at all in any situation. It's everyone's personalities are different. So I'm going to just read to you an answer to that question.
Great.
How can one avoid parental alienation?
Good.
Based on what I just said, the input from others and research. So the first thing is don't marry a narcissist. Okay. In the first place.
Yes, that would be helpful, right?
Right. But people don't even realize they are
yeah.
in a narcissistic relationship till years into it.
This is true.
It's not evident.
This is true.
Don't divorce a narcissist until the kids are older. That way you have full access to your children as long as possible. Now, given that you've already married and divorced a narcissist and those above two things, it's too late for that. Self-care, you said that. Self-care, you've got to be, if you're in a battle and you're in a war, you've got to be reinforced with strength. You've got to have yourself be strong and stable. Do not let yourself be manipulated by the ex-spouse or by your children. Own your power, expect respect. If your children don't respect you, teach them to. They've had years of watching you be disrespected, remember? So now it's time to do some damage control and some reteaching.
Mm-hmm.
Even apologizing. I'm so sorry. I have taught you that it's okay to disrespect me.
Mm.
Those days are over. We're turning the page and we're on a new chapter now.
Good.
We will not have disrespect in this family. I mean, that's about how it's got to be said.
Yeah.
Don't let anyone abuse you. Don't let your children abuse you where the ex left off. You've got to be the alpha. You have got to be the alpha in the relationship. I liken it to dog training. You've got to exude the alpha energy,
uh-huh.
even with the narcissist. That is something I do. I have probably the only one who's ever been willing to do that. Because narcissists are strong.
Yeah.
Children will gravitate towards strength, so demonstrate it.
Yeah.
Even if you feel weak, don't let them see you sweat.
Okay.
Always connect, 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 connect. Connect with your children. How can I connect today? Did I look them in the eyes? Have we had a meaningful connection today? Like, what can I do to connect to my children? Be a positive role model. Teach your children critical thinking skills. Teach your children critical thinking skills. Ask them some questions, the Socratic method. What do you think? What did you observe? How do you feel? What do you think of that?
Yep.
Teach them how to navigate difficult situations through using critical thinking skills. Try to keep your children with you as much as possible. Imprinting happens. The more they're with you, the more they're going to absorb you. The more they're with whoever they're with, they're going to absorb that person. If the narcissist was dysregulating for you, he or she is going to be dysregulating and unhealthy for your children. Personality disorder people do not bring emotional regulation. They're very discombobulating. They're confusing.
Yeah.
The cognitive dissonance you mentioned. Never forsake your self-care. Have other healthy role models to love your children. Bring them into your lives. Have them pour into your children's lives. Try to marry someone else. Find a new partner. Have them get a step-parent, someone who will love them in a normal, non-narcissistic way. That's important. The kids need that. You don't have to remarry. It's a personal choice. I'm just saying that's
sure.
something that has worked for people.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give your power away to your children. They will try to manipulate you just as your narcissist did. Call it out and put an end to it. That's the end of my bullets.
Wow. That is incredibly profound and helpful information for our listeners. And you speak from the standpoint of not only being a survivor yourself, but also a very informed psychotherapist who's done a lot of research and writing on the subject. So really, really appreciate your advice and expertise as an educator, therapist, and writer, and you've just really shared a lot of really helpful information. So I'm very thankful for the time that we've shared together, Sherry. And before we end the podcast today, I want to remind our listeners that Sherry Steins can be found on a couple different websites. Sherry, can you tell us the website for Lifeline Counseling Services in La Habra, please?
It's lifelinecounselingservices.org.
Okay, great. And then also,
Sherry. It's a nonprofit.
It's a nonprofit. Okay, in La Habra,
yeah.
Correct. Okay. And you focus on abuse, addictions, trauma, et cetera, in that particular clinic, correct?
Yeah, I work with all different types of abuse and victims of crime.
Wow.
People with complex trauma and abuse, domestic violence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything in the genre of abuse.
Wow, that's such great work.
Sexual abuse recovery.
Such an important specialty to have. And then you also have your Recovery Expert website, which is therecoveryexpert.com, where people
yes.
can find you for life coaching services, correct?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Very good. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, Sherry Steins is a very prolific writer. She has a blog page for Psych Central entitled The Recovery Expert. She can be found on Psych Central in the blogs under The Recovery Expert. Also with GoodTherapy.org.
It's under the pro section.
The pro section, pro Psych Central.
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
PsychCentral.pro.
Uh-huh.
Something like that. Yeah.
Okay, Psych Central. So it looks like pro.psychcentral.com would be the area where
yes,
you find her.
I think that's it.
Very good. Sherry,
right.
Thank you so
much. I have
much.
A few books, and I'm working
oh,
on more. Thank
can you.
You.
Tell us, can you tell us about the books, the titles, or do you have
well, right
titles
now
yet?
I'm writing one on what we just talked about.
Okay, very good.
And I also wrote, I have an e-book, and I have a domestic violence perpetrator's manual.
Wow.
And I'm working on another one in Spanish, so.
Oh, my gosh. You are a rock star.
I have a few. I have a few I'm working. Well, thank you for the encouragement.
Yes.
It was great
oh my gosh.
Having this conversation.
Sherry, you're amazing, and you're contributing so much information to this field, and I think you're helping our listeners so much already just by sharing your expertise in your writings, in your practice, and wow, we're just so lucky to have you here today. So thank you very much for being here, Sherry Steins. And thank you to our listeners for joining us on the Savvy Shrink. And hope to have you back, Sherry, at another time.
Well, thank you very much. I look forward to it.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you again for listening to the Savvy Shrink. For more information about this podcast, go to thesavvyshrink.com. Or visit my website at AndreaSchneiderLCSW.com. This is your host, Andrea Schneider. Until next time.